Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting installment of Let's Weekend. I am your host and host, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Deloge. Say hello to the good people, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, so it is. It is actually May 4th.
Yeah.
We welcome to a new month, and welcome to that time of year where it's like it's not quite summer yet, but summer is starting to sort of poke its head in, and yet spring is still going, so you still got the pollen and shit. So pollen and humidity, just goody-goody gumdrops, you know what I mean? And of course, on top of that, you've also got the random-ass weather because, you know, it's two seasons fighting over control of who's going to have dominance over the next few months. Among the things that happened this week was the shit that went down in just a bunch of college campuses all over the United States. There is an ongoing, pro-Palestinian movement that has grown and taken root in several campuses all over the United States. And as always tends to happen, the police get involved and people have gotten arrested. They've been beaten. They've been shot at with rubber bullets. All kinds of shit has been going down. And of course, there's also the ongoing stuff with former President Donald J. Trump, including a gag order that he violated. We also have some other entertainment related news, including involving Dan Schneider, and the producers on that Quiet on Set documentary. We got a couple of trailers to talk about as well. But we have all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So to start us off, as always, as we always do, with these shows, as is tradition, we started off talking about all the things we've been doing this week, all the things that have led up to this point. And as is also a tradition, we start with Chris. So, Chris, what have you been doing this week?
I've been dealing with the heat. That's been our main thing for this past week.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, being between 75 and 80 most of the time.
Yeah.
So that's been fun mm-hmm. to deal with. So yeah, that's been the weather thing here. But for things that I've been doing other than that, I've been watching some more Goodbye Earth on Netflix. That is mm-hmm. the Korean show that that features the potential destruction of the Earth via asteroid mm-hmm. that's going to crash into the Earth, particularly in the Korean region.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty... a pretty good show. I'm about 5 or 6 episodes in, so that's the about halfway through the show right now. It's starting to kind of really get its narrative hooks in
mm-hmm.
as you start to get like the idea of like what exactly is going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I just start seeing some narrative stuff starting to fall into place, which is really nice. So that's been nice to see so far. Mm. But yeah, also watched the first episode of Everybody's in LA, the new John Mulaney live show that they're doing for this comedy festival they're doing in LA.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a short form talk show, I guess,
mm-hmm.
that he's doing about being confused about what LA is,
yeah,
how it exists and all this, and starts off by showing you a map of all the various sections of LA
mm-hmm.
and sort of how stupid of a laid out city it is
mm-hmm.
Especially when there's like it's South LA that is just this long strip of land that goes out towards up here just to make sure they have access to that kind of stuff. But yeah, talking about like Korean town and all this, and yeah, talking about how silly of a city it is, especially mm-hmm. being in a desert and all that. So but then he has, Jerry Seinfeld on and some other comedians and such on to talk about L.A. and all that and how weird of a place it is. And I guess the topic for this episode was coyotes. So he mm-hmm. had somebody else stationed out on a hill somewhere to watch for coyotes while mm-hmm. he was in a ghillie suit. This is like an hour long episode. They take some calls from people watching. Mm-hmm. They had stories about coyotes, so they kind of go through that stuff, and it's a pretty fun show. Mm-hmm. Kind of a lot of chaos. There's like a couple of taped bits. Mm-hmm. One that involves this fake housing, like house buying show.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just like two different groups of comedians kind of going through the show, through this house, open house, mm-hmm. and looking at what's there and making jokes about various parts of it and all that, and trying mm-hmm. to ultimately buy it. And then I think they say that some random person bought it for way more money than what they were offering. So, you know, that's a fun little show for that. But there's that. They're going to be doing four more episodes throughout this week coming up. I think from the 6th to the, mm-hmm. the 10th. Might be not, five more episodes, but there's that. Also been watching some Poker Face on Peacock. This is the kind of Columbo-esque kind of show that they are doing that Rian Johnson wrote and directed for this, at least the season that I'm watching, where the main character, I forget what her name is, Charlie, she has the ability to tell when people are lying. And so the first episode kind of sets up this whole thing that's going on, where she was working at a casino and finds out about this murder plot that's going on. And kind of gets involved in it in such a way that kind of forces her to have to essentially go on the road on the lam to run away from a very rich person that's after her. So she's kind of happening to come into these towns, make some friends, and then finds out one of them gets killed and, or, you know, framed for murder or whatever, and uses her abilities to kind of figure out who the killer is, that kind of stuff. So it's, I think I've watched three episodes of this so far and really liking that a lot. So there's that. One of them involves a dog that randomly jumps into her car and refuses to leave, that really likes racist redneck radio shows. I was a big fan of that, so that's a whole fun thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a fun show. And then the last thing I watched is a movie called Yesterday that's on Netflix. This is the show that's about, like, it's Dev Patel is the main character who lives in Britain, is an aspiring musician, but hasn't gotten to any sort of level of fame to sustain a career out of it. And there's this weird thing that happens. It causes a worldwide power outage for 12 seconds, and he ends up getting hit by a bus during that darkness. And as he sort of wakes up and gets a handle on things, he figures out that nobody remembers the Beatles, and he's the only person that seems to remember them, and decides to use his musical skills to perform all of their, or as many songs as he can remember and compose and all that, to use as his own, and begins to become incredibly famous, and then kind of sees how fame on this scale kind of becomes isolating, isolates him from his friends and potential love interests and all that kind of stuff. So it's a nice little musical rom-com kind of thing. So there's that. That's it for what I've been watching. So for the other things I've been playing some more Fallout 4 of the new updates that has come out on the Xbox, PlayStation, and PC. And I've been playing a bit on all three. Mostly been on PC and Xbox for this past week, which means I'm still kind of early in it, kind of getting a handle on things. On Xbox, I've gotten to Boston. I'm trying to find Nick Valentine to have him as a companion, because I, you know, the dog is fucking annoying because it gets into all the crevices and blocks you from getting around. Not that any of the other humans are that much better, but they can at least shoot at enemies. In that sense, the one thing the dog has an advantage in is if you try to steal stuff, the dog doesn't care. It's a dog. So, but yeah, kind of, enjoying that for the most part, but also kind of feeling like it's not as good of an update as it could have been. Cause they, you know, make the performance and the load times a lot better here, but, I think there could have been more things done, you know, accessibility wise to allow more people to enjoy the game. If you had better options for managing inventory and having it just pick up stuff for you, especially say things that you've marked for highlighting, for materials you need, that kind of stuff, that could go a long way to making that game less of a tedious experience of just trying to look around and figure out what all you can pick up. Cause yeah, even for everything it's doing, it's still kind of a slow, tedious game a lot of the time as you're trying to manage your inventory and all that. So, but, yeah, still pretty solid for what it is, but that's been that. And the last thing I've been messing around with is my Analog Pocket. I've gotten the micro SD card working in it with emulators and all that for the Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Color, Super Nintendo, and NES. Mostly been playing GBA stuff, kind of hopping around, testing out a number of games, but WarioWare has been one I've been playing a bunch, and that's because it's a really fucking good game. Probably the best game on the system, but hopping around some other stuff, like trying out remember there was a driver game on there, and that's like a top-down kind of game where you're just doing the driving, so you're not doing any GTA stuff or anything, but the driving's not great. Huge surprise on that. There's Crazy Taxi I was playing, which is a version of, I guess, Crazy Taxi 1 and 2. It's an impressive sort of game to get on there, but it's the 3D aspect of it is kind of such low resolution. It's kind of just hard to parse a ton of what's going on, and it doesn't control great. So, you know, it's an impressive port, but not a great one. Then I was playing like the Fear Factor game. You remember the show Fear Factor?
Yeah.
That's a very weird time of reality television. Where it's like, hey, what if we just make people do gross or scary stuff?
Yep.
And it was a competition show in that sense with Joe Rogan as the host, and it went for a couple of years there. They made a game, and the game is terrible. You just make a character, and then you run through an event, and you watch five AIs do the thing, and then you're supposed to do it. I guess you could just practice it ahead of time, but the way they have it all set up, I've tried a couple episodes of different things they're trying to get you to do. One was like, oh, here's like a platforming challenge, but you're watching it from top down, leaping across these boards that are sitting on this like rod or something. So it kind of tips, each one tips like left or right. So you gotta try to grab flags as well while you're doing this. And if you don't, you just fall off and all that. And it's a very weird game. It doesn't really have much to it. So there's that. I tried out the Yu Yu Hakusho game, so there's two of those games. There's a turn-based strategy RPG that's pretty good. There's another one that's just kind of an action game, I guess, where you're just kind of a vaguely Yusuke-looking character running around, fighting dudes. And it's an okay game, I guess. It's just telling you the story a lot, and you just randomly run around and beat up dudes. And the combat's not very good.
Yeah.
And all that. So it's one of those games. You're like, hey, we got a way to try to make this game. And it seemed like if they didn't get the license, it was probably going to be okay. So you could just put a generic license on there and figure something out. But yeah, there's like no facial features on any of the characters. Just like when you run into Kuwabara's got the red hair. That's noteworthy, but so I was like, Yusuke's got green outfit on. Okay. That's no real detail on any of that, because it's trying to do this pseudo isometric kind of look to it. So, but yeah. Also played a bit of Final Fantasy 3/6. I played 3 on Super Nintendo for a good hour. Then tried out the GBA version, which unsurprisingly is very similar. But yeah, that game's pretty neat. It's got a really neat intro that not many JRPGs or any games were trying to do at that point, where it kind of runs you through the story and throws up credits for who was working on the game, that kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, there's at least like 6 guys who go on to be directors of their own games here, and a lot of big names, which is not surprising at all. But it's like, yeah, there's a lot of talent on this game. People go on to make, you know, Final Fantasy 7 and the other Final Fantasies 12 and all these other games. So yeah, but that's been pretty much all I've been doing. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I am still playing Helldivers 2. Don't know if you know this, but there is we might be talking about it tomorrow on the Day Zero update, but there's some issues that are going down with Helldivers 2, because recently Sony made it a requirement that if you're playing on Steam, you have to link a PSN account to it in order to play, which is a problem because there are a bunch of places in the world where you cannot do that because it's not available there. And as you can imagine, it has really pissed a lot of people off. Now, I play it on my console, so it was never an issue for me. But there are people who are kind of angry about it. But yeah, we'll probably be talking about that a bit more tomorrow. But yeah, that game is still sort of going as you would expect it. There's like this, currently we've got like an emergency order going on where there's like these machines that like have been turning out what's called termicide. It's on the terminated part of the terminated front. And it's like an insecticide gas that they're trying to, you know, use to kill all the terminids. And the problem is, it ended up doing the exact opposite. It not only made them start reproducing at a rapid rate, it also mutated them and made them stronger. So now we have to deal with this thing where we have to try and find the places to turn these things off, and at the same time try and get rid of as many mutated terminid eggs as we can. It is significantly difficult because the termicide machines have pumped out so much of that stuff that it's actually made it difficult to see in a lot of parts. So there's like this sort of smogish fog hanging over everything. But yeah, so that's Helldivers 2. I also started playing Fear and Hunger Termina again, going with a different character. And yeah, so the thing about that game is, like, every character that you play, you know, they all have their own class, and that means they all come with their own strengths and weaknesses. And there is this one character, Marina, who is an occultist, and she's not terribly strong starting out, but because she's an occultist, that means she can learn some fairly powerful magic later on. But if you play the game right, you can actually go ahead and recruit Abella, who's another character you can start out as. She's a mechanic, and she's also a tank, basically. And if you can pair her with Marina for your party, you make them pretty formidable. So yeah, I'm seeing like where I can go with that game. Still fairly difficult, as you know, Fear and Hunger tends to be. A little bit more manageable though. But other than that, books. I was reading this really fantastic book called Rule of Capture by Christopher Brown. And it's basically like, what if John Grisham decided he wanted to try writing a dystopia? And that's basically what it is. It's about a guy who's a lawyer who specifically defends, who basically makes his whole practice about defending people who are essentially accused by the government during a sort of, they call it a war on terror, but it's not really. Basically, the game takes place, I mean, the book takes place like a few decades into the future, where there's, you know, climate change has sort of started wreaking havoc, and there's parts of the southwestern United States that are no longer habitable, so a bunch of them have started to have to cross over the border into other parts of the country. There's a superstorm called Superstorm Zelda that came through Florida and basically wrecked the whole state, as well as a bunch of Texas. And on top of all that, because there's like issues with resources and stuff, the United States ends up getting into a resource war with China and loses, which, amongst other things, means that the U.S. ends up having to cede some of its territory to the People's Republic of China, namely Hawaii and Puerto Rico. So on top of everything else, the war basically knocks the United States sort of off its pedestal of American exceptionalism. That concept is now dead and gone, and basically everyone in America knows it. And as this is all going on, there's this really sort of complicated and sort of tied presidential election that's happening in the background that is so close now and had so much bullshit happening with it that the Supreme Court is going to have to make the decision on who did it. Because the guy who was the previous president who's running for re-election is basically like Trump 2.0. He's done everything from create internment camps for supposed dissidents. And basically, it's really obvious that the United States, as we know it, is going down the drain and there's really no saving it. But there's a bunch of really rich and powerful people who want to keep hang on to their personal power at all costs, and they're willing to turn the United States into a dictatorship in order to do it. It's damn good. There's also a sequel, and I'm going to go ahead and order that too. But yeah, there's that. And really, other than that, the cicadas. Yeah, the cicadas are here, and they are driving me fucking insane. They're like, cicadas are a thing that we have here down in the South every 11 to 17 years or so. And this was particularly a year where there was a whole lot of them, like an unusually large number of them compared to what we, you know, what typically happens, which means, every morning when you wake up, you've got this sound outside that sounds like, you know, somebody's car is stalling out in like a road down the road somewhere. It's like, right. It's freaky, and uncomfortable, but, yeah, that's what I've been doing. So you got anything you want to add, Chris, before we move on?
Nope.
Yeah. Alrighty then. Well, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, this week, I wanted to talk a little bit about a person who is very important to American history in ways that are unfortunate and gross, and honestly probably would not have been anywhere near as important as he really is, except for the fact that, you know, his son eventually became president of the United States. Yeah. Donald Trump, of course, was the 45th president of the United States. He is now hopefully never going to be president again. But when people talk about Donald Trump, they often sort of leave out like some things they don't really talk about that much, because compared to Trump, like Donald himself, this guy wasn't really as like flamboyant or public or all the stuff that his son would end up becoming. And that is Donald Trump's father, Frederick Christ Trump. And no, I'm not making that up. His middle name really was Christ. So a bit about who Fred Trump was. Well, first of all, you have to know that Fred Trun Fred Trump was the son of a German immigrant who made his money by running a bunch of brothels in and around New York City. And he, when he was born in 1905, the United States was sort of like what's then considered to be like the nadir of American race relations. He grew up in a part of New York that was notorious for the type of ethnic enclaves that were constantly at war with each other. So you can basically imagine that, you know, Fred Trump, having grown up in that particular environment, he was probably going to have certain attitudes and ideas and stuff about how a person should do business that would eventually make their way to his son. But just to tell you a little bit of who Frederick Trump was, you've probably heard that story before, that when he was 21 years old, he was supposedly arrested at a Ku Klux Klan rally in 1927 that happened in Queens. Have you heard that story, Chris?
No.
Okay, so that's one that often gets brought up when you talk a little bit about Trump and his family history. So yeah, 1927, there was a rally by the Klan that eventually turned into a riot in Queens. Fred Trump was there, and he was arrested. Now, it should be pointed out and needs to be made clear, it's never been incontrovertibly proven what exactly he was doing there, other than the fact that it's perfectly possible he was just, you know, just there he may have been just an innocent bystander, because again, it was a riot. It's possible he was a fellow traveler. Hell, it's even possible he was a Klansman himself. Nobody really knows. Now, Donald Trump himself has basically flat out denied, that this ever happened, because when the sort of information about the riot and the people arrested came out, it said that the perpetrator lived at Devonshire Road, which and Donald himself said, no, he never lived there. He never lived at that place. For the record, Frederick Trump did live there, and he did live there at the time of arrest. It should be pointed out, according to one article on the riot, that all seven arrestees were all wearing Klan attire. So, again, it's really not terribly well known. But basically, the Trump sort of name, as far as like real estate and architecture and housing contract, all that stuff, basically, Fred Trump is the guy who's responsible for starting that. And the way he did that is he basically profiteered off of the government housing contracts that, you know, started coming out in abundance during the post-World War II building boom. And he, you know, basically he did, if you've ever like looked into like all the stuff that Donald Trump did to sort of build his own real estate empire, it basically is an exact copy of what his father Fred did. Self-dealing, inflating prices, shifting risk to other parties while keeping capital. He would work the refs, you know, claiming bias against himself when there was none, lying, cheating, skimming profits at the taxpayers' expense, and of course, tax fraud. All of which Donald Trump himself has done in abundance. I should also know that he died in 1999. He had been suffering with Alzheimer's for 6 years. And if you know anything about Alzheimer's, you know that it's genetic. So now you can look at Donald's behavior recently, and it starts to make a little bit more sense. So while he was making all this money as a, you know, real estate tycoon, all this, he also started to become more politically connected. He was a massive funder of the John Birch Society. Chris, are you familiar with the John Birch Society?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, the John Birch Society is basically the great granddad of crazy populist right wing lunacy. They were the ones who famously became infamous for finding commies under the bed. Yeah, they're that group. Huge supporters of McCarthy's Red Scare and all that shit. It was actually founded by Robert Welch, who was like a fruit juice and candy magnate. And he was apparently, and Fred Trump was a close personal friend of him. He was also a personal friend of the Reverend Billy Graham. He was a supporter of Dr. Fred Schwartz's anti-communism crusade. And he was also a major fundraiser and donor for Senator Barry Goldwater when he was running for president against Johnson. Way back in the mid-60s. And if you don't know, if you know anything about that, about Goldwater, is that he, whether intentionally or unintentionally, basically kick-started the modern sort of contrarian right wing as we know it today. And then, of course, there's the fact that, much like his son, Fred Trump was a fucking racist, a really awful racist. He was also notoriously dodgy about the fact that he was of German ancestry. During and after World War II, he started lying about his German ethnicity, started claiming he was actually Swedish. And he basically did this because he was trying to get in good with his various Jewish tenants. On top of all that, he was infamous, I mean notorious, for his racist housing policies. Some of you may not know this, but the Fair Housing Act of 1968 actually made housing discrimination illegal. And they kept doing this shit well into the 1970s. The Trump Management Corporation, which was one of Fred's companies, was actually sued by the federal government in 1973 for refusing to rent to black people. And it was initially resolved in 1975 without an admission of guilt. And here's the thing. That happened 2 years after Fred had actually transferred ownership of that company over, well, not ownership, but take control of that company over to Donald. This is actually, believe it or not, this is where Donald Trump first became famous, when he was photographed with his father during these various trials, and he started showing up in the paper. Because, believe it or not, you know, I mean, he's a gross caricature of everything that's terrible with America now. But when Donald Trump was younger, he was actually not that terribly looking a guy. I mean, he was as narcissistic as all get out back then as he was now, but he actually wasn't that bad looking, and he also hadn't become so obsessed with the spray on tan like he eventually became then. But yeah, so that's actually how Donald Trump first became famous. And then here's the thing: this kept happening. They ended up getting charged again with discrimination in 1978. Because after that 73 trial, they had made a housing agreement with new terms in 1975. And then 3 years later, they end up getting charged with discrimination lawsuit for violating these same terms they had agreed for. And then in 1983, the New York State Division of Housing and Community Renewal found that two of the quote unquote Trump villages, which, you know, those are just sort of the collective name for the various, you know, housing developments that the Trump Corporation were responsible for building, were about 95% white. Yeah. This in and of itself is also a big deal because it was sort of one of the first, like, really massive tests for the Fair Housing Act. Because this was like, this guy, you know, the Trumps were one of the biggest, not just in New York, but in the entire Northeast, one of the biggest, like, housing developers in the region. So the fact that they actually had to go to trial and had to pay up and, like, renegotiate their terms meant that the Fair Housing Act actually had legs and it had power behind it. And of course, Donald himself never forgave them for this. He was constantly, you know, because obviously he, you know, 2016 was not the first time he tried to become president. He had tried to run for president a couple times before, and every single one of them was about the right to try and discriminate for whatever reason on housing. And if you remember, Donald was president and he signed on Ben Carson to be the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. and Carson basically parroted all of Donald's, you know, talking points about how the Fair Housing Act was mandated social engineering scheme, quote unquote, shit like that. But he also, Fred Trunk was also buddies with Roger Stone, which in turn meant that he was also buddies with Roy Cohn, who was Roger Stone's mentor and probably one of the most evil human beings to ever walk the face of American politics. So that's kind of that sort of connection between that with Roger Stone and Roy Cohn is also how the Donalds ended up getting Cohn on as their like legal counsel for a lot of their shit. In fact, Roy Cohn was their defense, was one of their defense attorneys during the fair housing trials in the 70s. Yeah. But, Fred Trump, died 1999. He died from Alzheimer's. By the time of his death, he had to have a cancerous growth removed from the left side of his jaw, which left a pretty obvious depression that if you ever see like older pictures of him, like when he's older, you can clear, it looks like he had it's pretty obvious if you look at it. He was also, as you can probably imagine, a very cruel parent. Now, obviously, parents of those days, especially wealthy families, can be stern and authoritarian, and that's nothing unusual. But the thing was, is Fred Trump had this weird sort of thing where he was trying to groom his sons to be carrying on his legacy in the family business. And he wanted his son, Fred Jr., to do this. And thing is, as far as like that family is concerned, Fred Jr. was probably the one guy who was relatively decent. He didn't want to go into the family business. He wanted to make an honest living as an airline pilot. And of course, Fred Trump thought he was a pussy and basically took every chance he could to mock him at every chance he could. And so instead, he ended up, you know, doting on his son, Donald. Trying to raise up his ego, treat him to be invincible. He is a king. You are a king. All that stuff, but also withholding just enough information that he ends up turning out to be the exact same sociopath as he himself was. Frederick Trump. He was the father of 45th President Donald J. Trump, an absolute monster who gave birth to a monster. And he inadvertently set loose some of the worst suffering of the 21st century upon the United States and the world. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. All right. So with that out of the way, it is now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our assholes of the week are all the people who ended up abusing and hurting the various protesters and activists who were taking part in all the pro-Palestinian encampments and all of the various universities all over the United States this week. Nearly 300 people were arrested at campus protests last weekend.
You go on ahead. Yeah. Yeah. There were protests on very much a lot of campuses across the country. Mm-hmm. All the way from, you know, USC and UCLA through Austin, Texas, yep, to even some in the South.
Yep, Ole Miss.
Alabama, Ole Miss, mm-hmm, a bunch of places like that up to the Northeast, with a lot of the Ivy Leagues getting protests and definitely getting different reactions to some of them. Some schools did the smart thing and kind of listened, and others decided to sick the police on them.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them seemed to do that, which did not go well.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the whole thing is this starts, you know, seeming reminiscent of various other sort of campus protests we've seen, mm-hmm, against wars in the past, mm-hmm, especially even ones that the U.S. were not directly involved in.
Yeah.
But yeah, even through like the protests for the Vietnam War,
mm-hmm,
a lot of that stuff seems very similar. Though, you know, these protests are all pretty peaceful, which some of those in the the Vietnam War were not, but yeah. That's kind of the whole thing there. People learn from them. So that's hopefully we don't get anything like the Kent State shooting, which the day we're recording is the 54th anniversary of that shooting.
Yep.
And that was one where when they did a Gallup poll, like either shortly after, it was like 60% of people, at least 60% supported the move to shoot students. So that's a fun thing. Where if that happens here again, I imagine there'll still be a lot of people supporting it because a lot of people have been able to try to paint these as anti-Semitic protests, which they're not. There's a lot of Jewish people leading these or involved in these.
Some of whom are actually Holocaust survivors.
Yeah. And you're just seeing right-wing politicians, even just general Democrats that are very much in the pocket of Israeli PACs.
Yeah.
Like the AI PAC, that kind of stuff. So very much being involved in that. But then you got Bernie Sanders out there calling, you know, Netanyahu out for trying to use these as part of his propaganda stuff. So yeah. But yeah, we had agitators attacking protesters on UCLA's campus.
Yep. That and the LAPD just stood back and let it happen because, of course, they did. It's the LAPD after all.
Like, oh, I don't want to get dirty just yet. Let these people that, you know, they found GoFundMes and all this that showed that there were people getting paid and supporting the people wanting to do this. There are people trying to unmask people that are protesting to, I don't know, get them canceled, I guess, but there's that kind of stuff. We also continue to see cops, you know, pulling off hijabs off of Muslim students and all that. So that's shitty. Even pulling off yarmulkes, if you're thinking the Jewish students are getting off easy here. They're going after anybody with any sort of religious attire on. But yeah, the UCLA one very much is unfortunate, especially as a number of politicians try to call it a violent protest when it was perfectly fine until these right-wing outsiders showed up and the cops, obviously. So they had a bunch of people get arrested there. And yeah, then the NYPD had some fun.
Because it's the NYPD!
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure they're the ones who also had started using rubber bullets, too. I can't remember if it was them or someone else. But yeah, rubber bullets got involved at one point.
Yeah, the NYPD were on Columbia, continuing to be on Columbia University's campus to deal with protesters as I think they took over one of the buildings, the Hamilton Hall, as well as other parts of the campus. And they had this whole big thing. They ended up making like a hype trailer out of this little like a bridge that they made that let them get in through a window on some higher up floor.
Yeah.
They start going through and they're looking at like a bunch of sleeping bags and such, being like, oh, this is where, you know, acting like they're terrorists. Like the ironically, like the IDF when they were going through buildings being like, oh, this is a sign, a Hamas sign, or they're planning their activities, and people that could read it were like, it's a work schedule. You're in a hospital, you idiots.
Yeah.
They had people on, I forget what television shows, but showing like bike chains being like, this isn't what, you know, college students have. This is what professionals have. And they're like, people obviously pulled up their sheets that show that all these are the same chains that Columbia sells to their students for locking up their bikes because of course they do. And what was it, a terrorism book? It was like a short guide to terrorism that's like, if you just read the cover, you're like, oh no, they're learning how to do terrorism from a book. And it's like, no, this is like a short history of terrorism, of recent terrorism history. But the NYPD prop department seems to be doing a great job mm-hmm. of finding things that they can show on TV to be like, look, they're not just students figuring out how to do things. They're future terrorists. And it's like, no, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
People are just doing this stupid propaganda shit that I guess is going to get them a lot of money because they're doing all this on overtime. So mm-hmm. they get to beat up college students and break shit and make a lot of money. So that's a fun whole thing there. So yeah, it's fun that all these college presidents are just have the police on speed dial to come in and abuse their students mm-hmm. whenever they want. The president of Columbia took pictures the next morning near like broken glass windows and such. And mm-hmm. people were like, that was done by the cops. Like, you're doing this stupid shit over things that were done by your actions.
Mm.
So yeah, this is one of those things that's is getting spun around by the media, by the presidents of the colleges,
mm-hmm.
by the cops, to be much worse than it is.
Yeah.
Like, this is somehow a unique style of protest when it's like, no, lots of people got arrested in the Vietnam War days and the Iraq War days, the Afghanistan War days, all that. It's comes with it.
Mm.
MLK Jr. did not get treated nicely.
Mm-hmm.
He famously wrote a lot of stuff when he was in jail.
Yep.
So, you know, they literally sprayed those people down with fire hoses that
mm-hmm.
are not like your regular hoses. Mm-hmm. They're going at huge pressures that'll fuck you up if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm.
And you give the NYPD rubber bullets where you're supposed to shoot that at the ground.
Yeah.
But they're saying like, oh, this will hurt really well if we hit them in the face with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, you can damage their brains or kill them.
Yes.
So yeah, that's a fun time for the cops, I guess.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, that shit happened. And then on top of all this, the House, of Representatives passed a bill that is supposed to combat anti-Semitism, and then you look into it and it turns out that criticism of Israel is classified as anti-Semitism.
Yeah, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act.
Mm-hmm.
See the adoption mm-hmm. of the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism for the enforcement of federal anti-discrimination laws regarding education programs.
Mm-hmm.
This passed with a 320-91 vote. 70 Democrats and 21 Republicans voted against the measure.
Mm.
In case you're wondering, Lauren Boberts and Marjorie Taylor Greene voted against this.
Because, of course.
Maybe not for the altruistic reasons that you might expect.
Yeah, they did it because they're assholes.
Yeah, because they want to push anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
Marjorie Taylor Greene was saying she wasn't passing this and said the thing about how Jesus was given to the Romans by the Jews to be killed. It's like, no, the Romans did that on themselves.
Yeah.
So that's like one of the big bits of fake stuff that gets passed off by Christians mm-hmm. that is anti-Semitic. So, and yeah, this does the thing that seems really shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly to protect Jews, but also hurts them in the long run. And that seems like a lot of plans for curbing speech. That seems like that should be the number one thing that, you know, Republicans and Democrats should be against.
Mm-hmm.
Considering how much Republicans complain about speech being changed,
mm-hmm.
their freedom of speech and all that. So yeah, this is not a great time. Hopefully we get the Senate to be a clear head on this, but who mm-hmm. knows? We'll have to see how this goes. But yeah, mm. this is just bad, bad faith legislation, mm-hmm. essentially. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But fortunately, it's not all terrible because we do have one hero of the week for this week, and that is the Biden administration. That is getting ready to reclassify marijuana with a lower classification. It's going to no longer be a Schedule 1 drug.
And I believe it would be Schedule 3.
Yeah.
That's a low risk category that includes ketamine, Tylenol with codeine, and anabolic steroids.
Mm-hmm.
The proposal will be published in what's known as the Federal Register.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be time for public comments, followed by more agency review of the comments before the decision becomes final. So yeah, we don't know how long that'll take exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been a long pledge of Biden's to get this done, and they're mm-hmm. finally getting it done. So that'll be good to see. That'll make it easier for research to be done on marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now it's very, very limited use cases that stuff can be studied further for its effects and all that. So
mm-hmm.
that's a whole thing, but good that somebody's finally doing it, because it's ridiculous that it's in the same category as heroin, ecstasy, and LSD.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, that has been the show proper. We're now going to move on to the proper show proper. And our first story for the night is first in a duo of Trump-related stories. We now know what Trump's plans for 2025 will be if he wins. And yeah, be afraid.
Yeah.
Be very, very afraid.
It's wild and kind of scary that he's saying this stuff out loud.
Mm-hmm.
With an interview in Time magazine. I think two interviews, actually. They got all this information in. Mm. But yeah, he's covering a wide range of aspects of the government and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a big part is a war on the federal government.
Yeah.
Transform its size and scope, make it more beholden to Trump's whims and worldview.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. He seeks to sweep away civil service protections that have been in place for more than 140 years.
Mm-hmm.
He said he'd make every executive branch employee fireable by the president of the United States at will,
mm-hmm.
even though more than 85% of federal employees already work outside the D.C. area. Trump says he would drain the swamp and move as many as 100,000 positions out of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Plans would eliminate or dismantle entire departments. Yeah. They would haul out and politicize the federal workforce, force out mm-hmm. many of the most experienced and knowledgeable employees,
yeah.
open the door to corruption and spoil system of political patronage.
Mm-hmm.
As he says this even on his campaign website, I will immediately reissue my 2020 executive order restoring president's authority to remove rogue bureaucrats, and I wield that power very aggressively. So yeah, that's a fun aspect of it. So, yeah, I was looking to essentially build up an army of suck-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, making vast numbers of jobs subject to appointment based on political affiliation would amount to absolutely mm-hmm. the biggest change in American public sector mm-hmm. since a merit-based civil service was created in 1883.
Mm-hmm.
One of the architects of his plan for Trump's second term said as much in a video last year for the Heritage Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he served as the director of the Office of Management and Budget under Trump. But yeah, in this video, he spoke about the plan to crush what he called the woke and weaponized bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
He discussed dismantling and remaking the Department of Justice, the FBI, and the Environmental Protection Agency. All that kind of stuff. There's a bunch on, you know, abortion rules, essentially leaving it up to the states, but allowing them to start tracking periods and all that,
mm-hmm.
and having more control over tracking pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything happens, they would be able to quickly respond with charges and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a whole wild thing. Just really need to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
See why you definitely should not be voting for Trump.
Yep.
But yeah. There you go.
Yeah, so, yeah, we got that shit. And then on the other side of it, Trump was ordered to pay about $9,000 for violating the gag order in his criminal hush money trial in NYC. And it probably won't be the first time that this happens, because apparently he's already started violating the gag order again.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, for violating gag order aimed at protecting witnesses and jurors in his Manhattan criminal trial.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecutor in the trial last month asked Judge Juan Merchan to fine him $10,000, $1,000 for each of 10 posts
mm-hmm.
For violating gag order and rule in Trump Earl Trump in contempt of court. Mm. And Merchan on Tuesday fined Trump for 9 of those posts and required him to remove them. 7 from his True Social account and 2 from his campaign website.
Mm-hmm.
Also warned Trump that the court will not tolerate continued willful violations of its lawful orders, that if necessary and appropriate under the circumstances, it will impose an incarceratory punishment.
Yeah, please do that.
Yeah, which means they won't hesitate to put him in jail if they need to.
Yep.
Which would be fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that whole trial has been going on. Nothing really huge has been going on.
Yeah.
I know Hope Hicks testified, so.
Yeah.
It's definitely getting some names in there.
Mm. All right. So yeah. Now moving on from Trump, we got this bit of story. So the last sentence was handed down for the officers and paramedics involved in the death of Elijah McClain.
Yeah. The last sentence for the 3 police officers and 2 paramedics involved in the young man's death has been handed down. Mm. On Friday, Aurora Fire Department medic Jeremy Cooper administered the fatal dose of ketamine to McClain, was sentenced to 14 months in jail and work release.
Mm-hmm.
His boss in the previous trial got 5 years in prison. Mm. 2 of the police officers were acquitted, but Officer Randy Rodema was sentenced to 14 months in jail and 4 years probation.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, not as great as you would expect, but at least 3 of those 5 people would be held accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's sad news, but some good stuff coming out of it.
Yeah. All right. So here's another thing where it's like, oh, this is definitely not a pattern. Another Boeing whistleblower has died.
Yeah, it's weird that this keeps happening. Joshua Dean, a former quality auditor at a key Boeing supplier who raised concerns about improperly drilled holes in the fuselage of the 737 MAX jets, has died.
Yeah.
Dina quickly fallen into critical condition after being diagnosed with an MRSA bacterial infection.
Mm-hmm.
He was airlifted from a hospital in Wichita, Kansas to another facility in Oklahoma City. Medical teams were unable to save his life. He was one of the first to flag potentially dangerous defects in the 737 MAX jets at Spirit AeroSystems, a major Boeing supplier that was spun off from the plane maker in 2005. Now federal investigators look more closely at Spirit and Boeing to understand what went wrong with the door panel that blew off in Alaska Airlines Boeing 737 MAX 9 midair in January. The latest chapter in a long and troubled relationship between the 2 companies. So yeah, this guy unfortunately has passed away. I don't know how this seems to keep happening to people that whistleblow at Boeing, but it sure seems like a huge coincidence.
Yeah. So coincidental. Totally not a pattern.
Yeah, and both were represented by the same lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Fascinating. But, going on from there, we now have the story of 8 different newspapers have gotten together and are suing both OpenAI and Microsoft for copyright infringement.
Yeah, for using their content as part of the data that the OpenAI is using to generate its own stuff.
Yep.
Let's see. 2 of them I know at least are the Chicago Tribune and the New York Daily News.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to see if there's any more here named. The Denver Post maybe is mentioned here. All these papers are owned by the New York investment fund Allen Alden Global Capital.
Mm-hmm.
As for unspecified monetary damages for the practice of using its copyrighted work to end. Suit additionally asks for the direct destruction of any AI models OpenAI uses that incorporate work published by the newspapers. Something AI experts have said would be nearly impossible to accomplish without completely rebuilding its models, an incredibly arduous and costly endeavor, which I would say would be the thing you would have to do then. Retraining an AI model could cost on the order of $100 million. earlier models and a billion or even multiple billions for future models. And it's like, well, that's not their problem. They didn't, you know, authorize or get paid for this copyrighted material that's being used for this stuff. So that seems like the cost of business.
Yeah,
the copyright infringement suit claims the makers of ChatGPT copied stories from the newspapers with impunity, never seeking permission or payments for the use of millions of articles that were used by the popular chatbot to respond to questions. And yeah, ChatGPT is obviously heavily funded by Microsoft, so they're part of this lawsuit as well.
Yep.
Yeah, the suit cites an example in which ChatGPT states the Chicago Tribune is a recommended infant lounger the paper never endorsed. In fact, the product the chatbot mentions has been linked to infant deaths and recalled. Another example noted by the suit, ChatGPT was asked if smoking cures asthma, which the chatbot fabricated. Denver Post published research indicating that smoking can be a cure for asthma. That assertion is obviously false. The paper never published such research. So, yeah, it's a thing we've seen where it'll make up stuff and cite false, you know, fake links to research papers and whatnot. So it's a whole fun thing. It's part of this. So there you go. Good luck.
Yeah. I'll see where that goes. Yeah. And now we're on into the entertainment portion of the show. And Dan Schneider, who was one of the most influential and, let's be honest, infamous executives over at Nickelodeon back in the day, is suing producers of the documentary Quiet on Set that accuses him of pedophilia and child abuse.
Yeah, Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV, which uncovered alleged abuse and misconduct at Nickelodeon, and is on Max, became their biggest streaming title ever.
Yeah.
The lawsuit reads in part, Quiet on Set's portrayal of Schneider is a hit job, while it is indisputable that two bona fide child abuse, sexual abusers worked on Nickelodeon shows. It is likewise indisputable that Schneider had no knowledge of their abuse. He's not complicit in the abuse, condemned the abuse once it was discovered, and critically was not a child sex abuser himself. For the sake of clickbait, ratings and views, or put differently, money, defendants have destroyed Schneider's reputation and legacy through the false statements, implication that Schneider is exactly that. It's like, sure? That seems coincidental when at least a few former actors on Nickelodeon have said that he was very much creepy around them, at the least.
He does realize that if this lawsuit goes through, that the producers will be able to do discovery.
Sure.
Yeah, that's not going to look good for him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's happening. And Peacock has announced that they are raising their prices just like they did last year. Because, that's basically all of the streaming services are doing this now.
Yeah, and NBC Universal has the Olympics coming up here in a few months. So they are raising prices, I think, starting July 18th. The cheapest tier for Peacock Premium with ads goes up by $2 to $7.99 a month.
Yep.
Peacock Premium Plus, which is mostly ad-free, is going up by $2 to $13.99 per month, and their premium annual price will increase from $59.99 to $79.99.
Yep.
And Premium Plus for the annual subscription is going up from $119.99 to $139.99. So $20 increase for both of those. That is a lot. That'll be starting July 18th for new Peacock customers and for existing subscribers with their next billing update on or after August 17th. So, yeah. No idea if anything is going to be better with this increased price, or just most likely they are wanting to ensure they'll get more money.
Yeah.
As people sign up for the Olympics. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's happening. The days of relatively cheap streaming are more or less over, I'm afraid. Yeah. But yeah, now back to like actual entertainment stuff. Season 6 of Cobra Kai is being broken up into 3 different parts, and the first part will be debuting July 18th.
Yeah. This will be cool. It's the 6th and final season.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be splitting up the 15 episodes into 3 parts of 5 each.
Mm-hmm.
So the first 5 episodes will be on July 18th.
Mm-hmm.
Second batch will be November 28th. And the final 5 episodes will premiere in 2025 with an exact date to be announced later. So I assume that'll probably be like January, February, mm-hmm. something early in the year. But yeah, they put out a teaser trailer for this and it looks pretty cool from the little bit they've put out. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, looking forward to that a lot. So yeah, see how that goes.
Yeah. All right. And now we got a couple of trailers. First and foremost, we got a teaser trailer for Netflix's Atlas. That's the new Jennifer Lopez sci-fi movie.
Yeah, that has a lot of aspects of, say, Titanfall.
Mm-hmm.
Where Jennifer is one of the these pilots that gets kind of locked into this suit
mm-hmm.
that is sort of doing stuff on its own until she decides to, you know, be part of it and help it
mm-hmm.
accomplish its goals. And yeah, it's not too far unlike what the Titanfall mechs look like.
Yeah.
Or mechs in general, really, of this kind of sort. But yeah, it looks pretty neat. She's maybe the part of it that stands out the most, because you just generally don't see Jennifer Lopez in these kind of movies.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, still looks pretty neat.
Mm.
It's got a lot of Iron Man stuff going on. You remember Robert Downey Jr. kind of having a lot of up close face stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's him in the suit kind of thing. So they're doing some of that here. But yeah, this will be out May 24th. So in a few weeks here.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to check that out.
Mm. Yeah. And last but not least, we got an official trailer for Disney's Mufasa, The Lion King, the prequel to The Lion King, or specifically their quote-unquote live-action remake of The Lion King, and it looks like ass.
Yeah, it's kind of a prequel sequel
mm.
of sorts, because it features Kiara, the daughter of Simba and Nala, who mm-hmm. are sort of telling her, I guess, about what her grandfather's story was.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of going back and learning more about him throughout mm-hmm. the process, and it has all the musical stuff that you'd expect out of this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are returning for this, though. I noticed Zazu is not voiced by John Oliver here.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because he's been shitting on Disney a lot since he
yeah.
was Zazu, but also I think it's supposed to be a younger version of that. So
mm-hmm.
there's that, but they have a lot of big names still here. Seth Rogen, Billy Eichner,
mm-hmm.
Donald Glover, Simba.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Blue Ivy Carter is voicing Kiara, so there's that, which goes with Beyonce voicing her mother.
Mm-hmm.
Keith David, Thandaway Newton, Mads Mikkelsen. Yeah, a bunch of people here.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be out December 20th, so that'll be a Christmas movie, I guess.
Yep. But yeah, with that, I do believe we've got ourselves a show for the week, folks. Yes, we do. We have got ourselves a show. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it listed here on the show notes for you. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, we got a little bit of Unscripted Shenanigans. You can find it at places like TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or basically any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, or you manage to find one we're not on yet, just give us a minute. As soon as we find out it's there, we will immediately sign up to it. But yeah, so we're going to go ahead and wind it down there. Thank you again, Chris, for joining me on this. And yeah, it's going to get hot and muggy out there, folks, so get ready for it. But while that happens, fortunately, you'll have another show for us next week. And hopefully by then, I don't know, hopefully we aren't all drowned in the humidity, because God, it gets bad. And then you got the pollen involved with it, and that just makes it even worse. Good night, everybody.